Good afternoon and welcome to today's webinar, The Secrets to Consensus, Getting Stakeholders Aligned. I'm Mary Bathon with the Public Affairs Council, and I'm so glad you were able to join us this afternoon. Today, we will hear from Tara Smith Anderson, who is the Director of External Mobilization at the American Petroleum Institute. This webinar will provide insight into finding alignment among key constituencies by establishing trust and gaining buy-in with your ever-shifting collection of stakeholders. Before I begin, I wanted to go over some quick logistics. The slides referenced during today's program were sent around to all participants earlier this morning and will be distributed again in a follow-up email in the coming days. For those who have not participated in our webinars before, we will not be opening the phone lines for questions. Instead, we will take all of your questions in the chat box on the lower left-hand side of your screen. If you have any questions or comments during the presentation, please submit them there, and we will get to them at the end of the program. And with that, I will turn it over to Tara to begin.
Great, thanks so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for calling in today. We're just gonna go ahead and get started. Secrets to Consensus, Getting Stakeholders Aligned. Really what I'm looking to outline here is the roadmap that we use when we work on our coalition building. I'm going to give you step-by-step everything that we consider, everything that we do that we incorporate into our plans. So just to start out, a little bit of background about API. We are the only national trade association that represents all aspects of the oil and natural gas industry, everything from upstream to midstream to downstream. And just to give some background there, for a little context, upstream is the exploration and production segment of our industry. Midstream is the transportation segment, and downstream is the refining and marketing segment of our industry. So at API, we have about 200 staff members here in DC, but we also have additional staff members all over the globe. And API is actually the industry standard. You could be at a facility and look at a piece of equipment, and it will say API certified, meaning that it has met the industry standards set by us for that facility. So moving forward, just to give you some background of the tools that we have spent the last 8 or so years building at API, we have an advocate database of over 45 million American voters. And we usually divvy these up into a couple different programs. The first program I'll call Energy Nation. That is our advocacy platform for industry employees, vendors, retirees. We currently have about 370,000 advocates in this database with bodies in every congressional district in the country. Sister program to Energy Nation is Energy Citizens. These are average, everyday Americans who care about energy. They have no tie to the industry, but energy is important to them in one way or another. Nationwide, we're looking at about 1.6 million individuals with bodies in every congressional district in the country. This was a program that started online, but has really morphed into both an online and an offline presence over the past few years. These people are volunteering their weekends to lobby legislators or attend pro-energy events or rallies to staff a booth at a local parade. These guys are movers and shakers, and they're passionate about energy. The third program that I'll reference is MicroTargets. This is our database of American voters. We've got about 43 million. Actually, I think this slide's a little bit out of date. I think we're over 44 million individuals. We've done a deep dive into several states, I think about 25 states, where we've completely fleshed out the entire state into our database. But we technically have bodies in every congressional district in the country. So people don't know who I am. They don't know who my CEO is. But they feel the way our industry wants them to feel on our issues, or they can be educated to feel that way. And these guys, I don't know who's picking up their phone lines, but when we call them, they will agree to be patched through and comment to the White House or their legislators, or they will be the volunteers to sign their name to a petition. Our fourth program that I'll reference is our Energy Forums. This is our grasstops play. We have on-the-ground teams in 21 states across the country that work to engage and educate grasstops on our key issues and encourage them to be advocates on behalf of the industry. We also work hard to make sure we always have a flush deck of strategic partners that we can work with, and we're always doing research to help us find the messages that help educate people on why our industry is important and why they should be advocates on our behalf. So what do we do specifically? We are here to educate and to tell people why energy is important, how it touches each and everyone's lives each and every day, and to help encourage them to be advocates on behalf of our industry. Clearly, we want to use them to help influence votes and to accomplish our own mission critical goals. We really strive at API to be good neighbors, to reiterate the value of our industry and the benefits that we bring each and every day. People don't often realize that unless it's wood or it's glass, it comes from big oil or the building blocks of big oil each and every day. So, you know, if someone wants to hate on our industry, okay, but are you living off the grid? Do you use an iPhone? Do you like that fleece? Do you have eye makeup on? People don't often realize that our industry touches everything that we do each and every day. We really work hard at establishing strong ally relationships with diverse entities. So our own legislative and regulatory fights have those diverse people on our behalf. And we really work to be a resource for API member companies and friends and family, both in DC and across the globe. So how do we build our coalitions? How do we get our stakeholders aligned? I'm going to walk through this in a number of quick, simple steps, but it should be pretty obvious for a lot of you guys. First things first, we do our research. We prep for the long game. We really look at what the issue is, what we're trying to accomplish, what the community looks like, what do they think, who's influential to that community, and how do we need to get there. So a ton of prep work, but we really plan and we try to listen to what's happening on the ground, because not every locality looks the same. And even if you're fighting a federal issue, how we influence bodies in one state is very different from how we influence them in another state. Step two, we're real honest with ourselves. What are our goals? Are we trying to pass or defeat a piece of legislation? Is this a regulatory issue? Are we just trying to create greater awareness in the community? Are we trying to educate people on the value of oil and gas or the benefits of a piece of legislation, what have you? We make sure that we're very honest with ourselves about what we're trying to do to help us shape how we're trying to get there. Step three, we figure out who do we need with us. So we have an honest conversation once again, who's with us, who's against us. Who will be influential in speaking on our behalf? Who should be part of this coalition? Who will make sure that they have the inroads with the community or the reputation with the community where people listen to what they're saying? Step four, we define our issues, our targets, and our audience. Okay, what's going on? Again, what is this piece of legislation? Who do we need to influence? And we really try to make sure that the members of our coalition represent the electorate. We want people, individual voters, to be able to see members of the coalition that look like them and talk like them and come from their neighborhood, so to speak. We look at our targets as well. Who do we need on this coalition to impact an individual legislator that may be making a decision on this issue? What third parties are important to have speak on our behalf or be part of our coalition? Step five, all right, let's talk about exactly what our plan is. What are we trying to do, and what do we need to do to get there? You know, is it simply lobbying? Is it grassroots outreach or input into a legislator? Do we need to run ads? What do those ads look like? Who needs to be speaking on those ads? What does our Get Out the Vote plan look like? Do we need to do some research to anticipate what legislators are thinking, what the public is thinking? Do we need to do a poll? We really try to do all of our background work here. What do we need to do so we can help plan how we're going to roll out this coalition and what our activities are going to be? But you really got to address some key questions about the coalition. All right. Do we come up with the name? API running something isn't always the most attractive voice in the room. So do we work with members of the business community or other representatives in the community to, you know, create a nice name where it doesn't sound like it's API that's pushing this? Maybe it's Concerned Citizens for the Future of Energy, or you guys, I'm sure, have all seen very vague names. But these are the kind of decisions that you need to ask, or I'm sorry, decisions that you need to make. After that, you know, do you need some sort of leadership? Is this a legal entity that has to have some sort of president or board member? Figure out exactly what you need to do to be structured correctly so you can act, so you can move. Step seven, easy. I love this slide. Define exactly what you'll do and what you won't do. Often when you don't anticipate this, there can be infighting in the coalition. People don't always agree on direction. So you need to set your boundaries. This is what we're going to act upon. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. You have to be nimble here, but it is really important to define yourself and what the coalition is going to be. Funding. Very rarely is anything done without funding. So make sure that you figure out what you need and how you're going to raise that money. Do you need, figure out what your budget's going to look like based on what those anticipated activities are. And then how are people going to contribute to this? Are you willing to fund it all on your own and just let members be, let different companies or different organizations be members of the coalition for free? Does everyone need to pitch in a little bit? I think that you can be very nimble here. People just need to know what their expectations are, and that will help you flush your plan out along the way. Step nine, define your targets. Who needs to be influenced here? And then figure out where people are going to be the most resourceful. You know, is it members of the business community? Is it diverse entities? Is it your local preachers? Is it the farming community? It can be anyone and it can be everyone, but it's really important to look at your potential targets and include them, because the more diverse you are, the more reasonable your argument's going to sound. All right. Step 10, create your recruitment documents. You've answered all these questions about your organization already. It's great to have a one-pager. It's great to have a website, something that people can see and they can refer to and that can help define you. And that's done. That's taken care of. And that helps get all that out of the way. Do you want to do a press release announcing the coalition? Do you want to have a luncheon event announcing the coalition and your intended goals? All these are very great things that may work well for your entity, just depending on what the situation is. Step 11, time to recruit. So take a look at everyone in the coalition. Who they all have different opinions of personal stakes on why they're engaged, and then go out and educate and activate. Who else can you get to join this coalition? Especially if it's only a name, this is a really helpful step to take. Who needs to be part of this? Why do they care? And what can they do on your behalf? Step 12, launch the coalition. Again, this can be done usually with a press release or an event. It depends on what's most important to you. But it's got to make sense for you and all the members of the coalition. And last but not least, step 13. So you've finally got everything done. You know what your goals are. You know how you're structured. You've got all of your documents together, your defined plan. Moving forward, hold people accountable. All right, we've got our plan of attack. This is what we're doing. This is who's responsible for what. But, again, really important here is make sure you have room for flexibility, because things change, sometimes daily. But as long as you're following your plan and you're moving things around as necessary, it should be pretty easy, because you already know what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. So that'll help cut down on any potential infighting. And last but not least, pivot. Make sure you're paying attention. You're hearing what people on the ground are saying. You're adapting to what is happening because things move very, very quickly, and you don't want to be so married to a plan that you miss out on potential opportunities to pivot and refocus and continue your goals. And with that,
yeah.
I think we're done.
I think we have a few questions from the audience.
Already? All right.
So we'll kick that off. So talking about getting out the message, when you're in your communities, how do you find that right person to deliver that message? How do you decide who's the best spokesperson?
Often what we do at API, a lot of times we do a poll formally. What is a segment of the population saying? What do they believe? What are they hearing? Who do they trust? Who do they not trust? Based on that, it depends. You know, I know often we've partnered across the country with labor. Labor has great reputation. Law enforcement has great reputations with Americans. We kind of have a list of usual suspects, but we try not to get married to anyone because things change.
Yeah, definitely. And going along that same vein with your materials, have you found anything to be more effective? Do you use social media and infographics, or do people still like getting those mailers?
Well, increasingly, social media is the way people communicate. So we make sure that we have vibrant social media presence. It moves quick, it moves fast, and that's so important. You know, we still do mailers on occasion because I think sometimes when people can look at something and touch it and hold it in their hands and they get it in their mailbox with their Good Housekeeping or what have you, I mean, that has an intrinsic value as well.
Perfect. How do you always engage or maybe not engage with detractors or people who are maybe putting out negative messaging or things that aren't always going along with what you want out there?
Well, it's hard. You know, I kind of feel like if something's out there, you shouldn't ignore it. But I think my colleagues in communications would advise against that. I think sometimes it's just easy enough to acknowledge it and to discredit it and not to talk about it again. Me personally, I probably would tend to answer almost everything, but maybe in a limited focus like that.
And then, so can you talk a little bit more about funding? How do you convince, say, your leadership that it's worth spending this money? How do you demonstrate the ROI that comes, you know, after making a big spend?
First of all, we always think about the threat. You know, what does this mean individually for this community, for this town, for this state, what have you? And a big concern for us is something I think that we always use to justify our activities is talking about the precedent setting. Mm-hmm. If they can do it here, they can do it everywhere. We've seen in the past number of years that a lot of the opposition is shifting to the state and local level. Not a whole lot's happening in D.C. right now, as most of you know. But, I mean, we still have threats at the federal level, but we've seen the industry opposition really going state and local, so we try to pivot as we can, and we try to, hey, if it's happening in this community, why can't it happen in this community? Mm-hmm. Why can't it happen in this state? And it's coming. And, I mean, in all honesty, there's a lot going on. It's a lot to handle. So even if you have a healthy budget, you pick and choose your battles, and I guess you just have to weigh one situation against the other.
You talked earlier on about sometimes, you know, it's tough to have API in a room, right?
Yep.
Okay, so everyone's going to be in a situation like that where they're like they're the folks that somebody doesn't necessarily want in the room or they're concerned about. So how reputationally do you manage that when, like, you know you have to be in a coalition, but sometimes you're the party that people don't necessarily
right.
want to act with the most?
Right. Well, I think that really goes to the diversity and outreach that we try to do. We're not just working with our companies. We're not just working with the business community. We try to demonstrate the value of the oil and natural gas industry to everyone, to, you know, to you and your iPhone and to you over there, you know, who's heating their home. And that really kind of all leads to our Oil and Gas 101, our kind of our education. Like, I have a very good friend that I went to high school with, and he's great. We reconnected on Facebook a number of years ago, and we are diametrically opposed to one another. He thinks everything that the oil and natural gas industry does is evil and wicked. And my answer to him is, how are we talking? We're talking on a computer, which was created out of oil and natural gas products. Like, you don't live off the grid, honey. Like, know it. Embrace it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some of that that is always going to occur, but we just try to really drill down about the good that oil and natural gas is and does.
What's the, you hit upon this a little bit, but you know, what's the biggest opportunity that technology creates for you when you build these coalitions, and what is the biggest problem that it creates?
Biggest opportunity. Well, you know, I love how, I mean, I'm not very good at social media personally, but that's how people communicate, and messages move fast. And so in a number of ways, it's really easy to have your message go viral if it's smart and it's, you know, it's pushed out by certain influencers. And that's something that we really looked at, like, who across the country is influential? How do we relate to them? How can we create a relationship with them if we don't? And some people will never be with us. It is what it is. But we try to be as diverse as we can and try to touch everything that we can. What was the other question? Biggest
threat, you know, or the biggest challenge it poses?
Well, you can't control the Internet, right? I mean, so think about all the messages that you get, or the forwards and the shares and the likes. It gets edited. It gets changed. I can't control that. So I think your messages can be distorted. There's only so much you can control there.
Other thing I wanted to ask you, you talked a little bit earlier about how, you know, certain players play certain roles at certain times. So a lot of the folks that we talk to want to make the campaign seem really organic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has a very grassroots kind of start slowly build,
right,
not corporate sponsored feel to it.
Right.
But those generally, like, they're very organized on the back end.
Very
they have to be. So how, in your experience, you know, how are some ways you can make a campaign seem like super organic, super grassroots, super community oriented, but it's actually very well orchestrated?
Go old school. Start having people in the community have a number of house parties, events. It's not 100 people. It's 30 of her friends and family. And, you know, have somebody tweet about it. And we did this program a few years ago where we were really reaching out to help educate members of the industry and say, hey, listen, here is a movie. You know, have a movie night at your house. Here's a pro-industry movie, and we sent them DVDs and it was like this movie kit. And we started having these little activities all over the country. I mean, I think that often in D.C. and in corporate America, we forget that sometimes the best ideas are the simplest ideas.
There's two other things I wanted to ask you. How do you, to your internal folks, to your VP, C-suite, whatever, how do you show that the coalition is doing its job? How do you prove value? We got 30 house parties and we had 30 people. That's one measure for sure. But, like, how do you show that the coalition has actually moved the needle? You know?
Well, I mean, the easiest way is if you win, right? But that's the end game. And sometimes you don't win. But I think if you can demonstrate that you've helped change the narrative, you know, that you've influenced one legislator, often we'll look at how many anti-industry articles are out there. And if people aren't, they don't really exist anymore, or there's not as many. I mean, I think take your successes as small as they may be, but don't forget them. Because sometimes it's okay to lose as long as you move forward and you change the narrative.
Okay. And then similarly, the other question was, how do you get folks involved that are non-public affairs folks? You know, so you know to move it forward, like you need a scientist or you need someone that works at a refinery or whatever, but they've never done this before, and so they don't see the value. You know, what's the sale to that person to get them involved, to get them to support you, to be part of it?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at people to work in the industry, you know, you look at, all right, if this happens, this refinery closes.
Yeah.
You lose your job. I mean, people care about the personal bank account. No judgment. It is what it is. But you have to understand that there are active forces out there trying to keep it in the ground. And that means you're not going to have a job. I mean, our industry is fortunate. We provide good, high-paying jobs for all types of Americans. Whether people assume to work in our industry you need a PhD in organic chemistry or you need to be, you know, hanging off a rig in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, wrong. People don't realize, I mean, I'm a political science major, and I work in oil and gas, let alone, you know, there's all sorts of quote-unquote blue-collar jobs that pay in the six figures. There's a place for everyone here. So we try to demonstrate that.
Okay, I thought of one more.
Okay.
Have you ever had one of those experiences where, like, you know, something didn't go quite as you planned, you know, that you wouldn't mind sharing and kind of the lesson you learned from it? Like, okay, this is, like, I wish somebody had told me this when I first started building coalitions, you know? Anything like that? Like, no one would know unless.
I think that, I mean, obviously, something that surprised me, sometimes pay-to-play may be okay. You know, I want this organic, lovely advocate who comes to me of her own free will and who's willing to put her heart on the line and her reputation on the line to speak on behalf of my industry. But sometimes if I can give support to a group who, you know, they like our issues, but they don't love them, but with little support, they're willing to write an op-ed, and that's an instance I think pay-to-play is okay. And that, you know, is kind of contrary to my initial gut feeling. I mean, you have to afford it, and it has to make sense. But
your point is deployed effectively.
Yeah.
It could do the job.
Yeah, you know what? I get it. Like, people come to API looking for support all the time, and I'm going to be real honest. What's in it for me? Now, again, we do some charitable things.
Sure.
There's nothing in it for me, but... But, okay, you want support, what's it going to get me?
Yeah.
And we're all doing this together. Everyone's trying to accomplish their own goals, and your organization may be lovely, but you may not have the same goals as I do, but how can we support one another?
It sort of raises that idea that, you know, when you're talking to, like, a third-party group, like a think tank or an academic institution, there's almost a little bit of, like, sales and negotiating. It's like a little bit of negotiating going on there. You know, almost like... Of someone that works in a sales part of an organization negotiates with a customer.
Yeah.
You know, what's the back and forth? How
yeah.
can we come to an agreement that works for us both? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, cool. Well, thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
This was a great presentation, a great overview, and I think some great takeaways and steps people can take. So I want to remind everyone as they close out of the webinar today to answer the quick survey that will pop up. That's how we do most of our programming and suggestions. And the recording of this webinar as well as the slides and some other resources will be sent out within a week. But with that, thank you again, and everyone else has a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.